supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
Welcome to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia. I am your host, Mike McGrath. Coming up later in the show, a frequently asked question. Produce in a garden has big chunks out of it. Something's eating it. What could be doing this specific type of damage? And is it safe to eat the good parts that are left behind? We'll answer those questions after a lot of your fabulous phone calls at 1-888-346-9499. Pat, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Thank you.
Oh, thank you, Pat. How are you?
Oh, pretty good. Thank you. And you?
I'm just ducky. Where is Pat? Pretty good.
Princeton, New Jersey.
Pat in Princeton. All right. What can we do you for?
Well, I seem to have a problem with my milkweed plants. I think they are infested with aphids, according to my research.
Okay.
This is the first year that we planted milkweed, so we really didn't know what to expect. And a few weeks ago, we found 8 black and yellow caterpillars on the leaves.
Yay!
And they were just munching away, and we assumed they were monarchs. And anyway, then we noticed that one of the stems was this orangey color. And later in the evening, we noticed many more stems had this orangey color.
Mm-hmm.
So when we looked closely, we could see movement. So we did some research, and we think that these are oleander aphids.
Mm-hmm.
And so we were afraid that they were going to affect the caterpillars. So my friend put on a rubber glove and physically removed what she could.
Excellent. Excellent. Yeah. Very good.
And then within 2 days, the caterpillars disappeared.
Well, they're supposed to.
Well, we thought they would hang around a little bit longer, but they didn't. And so we understood that they were going to try to find a spot where they could hang from.
Yeah.
So, in fact, just this morning, we saw two monarchs emerge from a holly tree that was about 6 feet away from the milkweed.
Excellent.
So my concern is, what about the milkweed and the aphids? We still see aphids. We're still removing them.
Mm-hmm.
The plants look healthy.
Good.
But we're not sure if they'll come back next year or if we should be doing anything to take care of them this year.
Okay. So aphids are sap-sucking insects that cluster by the hundreds, if not thousands, almost to exclusively on the tips of plants. They're well known for clustering on roses and pepper plants. I believe they are a known pest of milkweed. But your friend with the rubber gloves has the absolute perfect answer. Just putting on any kind of a glove and just rubbing your hand along the infested area will crush and destroy all those aphids while doing no damage to the plant. Now, aphids are totally sap suckers. They did not attack your caterpillars. I think probably where are you? You're in Princeton, so you got rained on a lot this year. Tough conditions for a lot of plants, and plants under stress are normally the ones that would get attacked. Now, did you feed your milkweed anything?
No. Like what?
Like plant food.
Oh, no, I didn't feed them anything.
Yeah, the questions get tougher after this, Pat.
Yeah.
No, that's good. That's good, because chemical fertilizers can attract aphids. I'm going to say that it's just a natural thing because of all the rain you got. It weakened the plants a little bit, and insects love to attack weakened plants. But it sounds like you're doing a great job. It looks like the milkweed is being consumed. You've got monarchs being born on your property. This is the time right now for them to begin their flight down to Mexico. Did you grow any monarch plants? Did you grow any adult plants? Did you grow any nectar and pollen producing plants to feed them once they came out of their chrysalis?
No, I'm sorry to say.
No. You've done a fabulous job. Don't be sorry. Next year, I want you to plant a plant called Tithonia, T-I-T-H. O-N-I-A. You're more likely to find it under its common name, which is Mexican sunflower. It's not a true sunflower, but it looks like one. It flowers over and over again. It's very free flowering. It flowers all summer long. And there's just something powerful about the pollen and nectar that is considered to be the A number one plant to fuel the adults for their journey south.
Well, that's just great. I'll be sure to do that. And is that the only plant that I should be thinking of?
No. You know, at the end of the year like this, there aren't a lot of things in flower. So you might look at regular sunflowers that you would plant halfway through the summer. Not the giant ones, but ornamental mm-hmm. sunflowers. You'd look for things that are good pollen producers. And go to monarchwatch.com. And there'll be a list of plants there to feed the adults. But Tithonia is number one.
Okay, I'll do that. I thank you so much.
Well, thank you, Pat. You're doing a great job.
Well, thank you. Bye-bye now.
Freddie, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Well, thank you, sir. How are you today?
I am just ducky, Freddie. How are you?
I'm not too good because my trees are dying on me.
Well, that's always a bad day. Where are Freddie's trees dying?
I am in Virginia, and I have Leland cypress trees. It started with a little small, look like a cocoon.
Okay, so wait a minute. What part of Virginia, Fred?
I'm in Charles City, Virginia.
Okay, but Charleston, Virginia, not Charleston, West Virginia.
Right.
Okay,
Virginia.
That confuses everybody, doesn't it?
Yes, it does.
Okay, so you got Leyland cypress, and they got little cocoons on them?
That's correct.
That's bad news, Freddie.
I understand that, because three, nine. Three of them are already dead.
What you have are called bagworms. They are very unusual caterpillars. They sew these cocoon-like things that, and you have to admit, Freddie, they do a good job. These things look like little pine cones, don't they?
Yes, they do.
They look like such a natural part of the tree that people think it's a sign the tree is healthy, but the webbing they use to make these cocoons is like Spider-Man's web. It's super strong. It's like steel. So
yeah,
it kills the tree two ways. It strangles the tree where the cocoon is attached, and then at some point in the season, the little worms, caterpillars, come out and they feed on the tree. So it's doubly destructive. They can do a lot of damage. And again, most people don't realize they're there until the trees start to die because everybody thought it was just pine cones.
That's right.
So how many Leyland cypress do you have?
52.
52?
Yes.
Yeah, that's quite a few, man. Is this a giant privacy wall?
Yes, I planted it all on my hand.
And how long ago, Fred?
And I had them now about 10 years.
Okay, so they're a good size.
Oh, yes.
And how many are dead?
Seven.
Okay. Have you checked the others for the bags?
Yeah, they're spreading.
Okay. So the first thing I want you to do is get out there with a pair of pruners and physically remove every bag you can safely reach. You know, obviously with this many trees, it's going to take you a couple of days, but you want to get those bags off. And just drop them into a 5-gallon bucket that's got a couple of inches of soapy water in the bottom. That'll kill everything.
Okay.
After you get all of the bags off the trees you can safely reach, I want you to either go online, go to an independent garden center, and get BT. Letter B, letter T. Uh-huh. It'll probably be sold under the brand name Dipel or Thoracide. This is one of the oldest organic remedies. It only kills caterpillars that feed on the sprayed parts. So you're going to have to ask your local extension agent when bagworms begin actively feeding in your area. So you want to be ready with the BT spray, and then about 2 weeks before the emergence date, I want you to start spraying the trees, whether you see any damage, any bags or not. And I want you to spray the trees with BT every 2 weeks. It's not that expensive. It's totally harmless to you, to birds, to bees. The only thing it kills is caterpillars who eat the sprayed parts. So if you cut off all the bags you can right now and you spray with BT all season long next summer, you should break the hold of these creatures. Are you feeding the trees at all?
No.
Good. Are they mulched?
Yes.
With?
Pine mulch.
Pine mulch. Pine straw or pine nuggets?
Nuggets.
Yeah. Get rid of them and replace it with pine straw. Where you live, you should have an abundance of pine straw in the garden centers. That's a much classier mulch. It'll protect the trees.
Okay.
All right?
Now, the ones that is dead, what tree would you recommend to replace it with that grows as a barrier also?
Well, I mean, if you've got nothing but Leyland cypress, you want to replace it with more Leyland cypress. But now you know what to keep an eye out for, and you'll always have a supply of BT on hand.
Good enough.
Well, it's time for me to take a little break and announce that I will travel down south to speak about the importance of horticultural therapy. When I appear at a benefit for a very special healing garden on Tuesday, October 23rd at 5 o'clock at the beautiful Country Club of North Carolina in Pinehurst. But don't go checking the events section of our website for all the details just yet, because we'll be right back to help you eat your holy produce and take more of your fabulous phone calls. I'm Mike McGrath, and you're listening to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia.
Support for You Bet Your Garden is provided by the Espoma Company, offering a complete selection of natural organic plant foods and potting soils. More information about Espoma and the Espoma Natural Gardening Community can be found at espoma.com.
Welcome back to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia. I am your host, Mike McGrath. Coming up later in the show, it happens to everyone. You go out to your garden and some of your tomatoes and peppers have holes in them, chunks missing from them. What did this dastardly deed? More important, if the rest of the produce looks good, is it good? Is it safe to eat? We'll answer all of those questions after more of your fabulous phone calls at 1-888-346-9499. Janet, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, Mike. How are you?
I am just ducky today, Jan. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. I'm doing great.
And
thanks.
Where is Janet doing great?
I'm in Unionville, Pennsylvania.
All right. What can we do for Jan?
Well, I had a question about mushroom compost because I'm in great mushroom country and have access to organic mushroom compost. Now,
okay,
I
so
know
let me
that it's pretty rich.
So
right?
let me stop you right there. Now, by organic, do you mean that you actually have the compost from an organic mushroom farm?
Yes, there is a farm that does totally organic composting, and so that their soil that they get rid of, it's called Mother Earth, and it's actually almost free, but you just have to bring your own truck. They do have delivery, but
and they grow organic,
totally organic.
And they grow organic yep. mushrooms.
Yep.
You got
good.
The good stuff. Yeah.
I know. Well, I wanted to know, the thing is, I don't just want it for my for the vegetables. I run it really for a flower garden.
Sure.
In really into growing flowers. And I was wondering if it was too rich to use, and did it make sense to get the soil like now in the fall and let it sit all winter, and then next spring can I use it as a conditioner, a soil conditioner?
Now when you get
like
it
a mulch.
When you get it, is it fresh out of the house?
I don't know that for a fact. I don't think so, but I think it probably is pretty fresh.
Okay. So there are two types of mushroom soil. There's fresh and there's aged. When it comes out of the mushroom house, a pile the size of a semi-trailer, a big truck on the highway,
would
eventually, after a year, cook down to, say, a third that size. When it comes mm-hmm. out of the house and it's, quote, hot, it is hot. You put your hand into the center of the pile, you will feel the heat. It also has a very pungent aroma. When it is cooked mm-hmm. down and, quote, aged, then it has no heat. And it has a nice earthy smell, but not a very strong one.
Right.
So
I do know. The stuff we used to get years ago really stunk.
Okay. So if you're getting fresh mushroom soil, absolutely bring it home now and pile it up. And by the spring, it will have aged significantly. If it still seems a little hot, spread it out over your beds, but don't plant immediately. Give it 2 weeks to a month to settle in. And or mix it with a little bit of compost or topsoil. But other than that, organic mushroom soil is like one of the best things. You know, really, it's a circle outside of Kennett Square in Reading, Pennsylvania, that this stuff is available in. So people on the West Coast and the Midwest, they don't have mushroom soil like we do. So no, it's a local treasure. Yeah. So, yeah, the warmer it is, the stronger the smell, the lighter you apply it. But once it's fully aged, it won't have any smell. It won't have any heat. Okay. It'll have a little bit of a smell, but it'll be nice and earthy. Right. And then you can use up to 2 inches of it.
Great.
And always spread it on
around 2 inches. I don't want to get it too heavy. Then.
Yeah, yeah.
If I
always
use it as a topsoil.
Correct. You're always going to put it on top. Don't mix it in to the soil.
Okay.
Because mixing in is just going to bring up weed seeds. Next season, if you really like how things worked out, go get it in like June or July when the hot weather will help condition it much more quickly.
Okay, great.
Carol, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Thanks. I appreciate that, Mike.
Well, thank you. We appreciate you. Carol, where are you?
I'm in Elwood, New Jersey, which is in Mullica Township, which is right outside of Hamilton. Two of my five knockout roses do not look good, and this is the second season that it's happening. The leaves are not a dark green like my other knockout roses. I've used organic rose fertilizer. I've used cottage farm rose fertilizer that gets diluted. I use knockout rose fertilizer. I use coffee and tea grounds. I've used banana peels that I've dried and cut into small pieces. And I've used Epsom salts. In all my research, this is what I found, you know, and I've tried, and nothing seems to change my situation.
Right. The Epsom salts are theoretically to add magnesium. The banana peels are supposed to add potassium, but it just doesn't work that way. And these are their fertilizers. You're not using them all at once. This is stuff you've tried over a period of years.
Mm-mm.
Okay.
No.
Okay, go ahead.
And these rose bushes are planted with compost and good topsoil.
Mm-hmm.
There's plenty of airflow around them, and there are actually three of them that are pretty much protected from the winter. And I do trim them back very heavily when it starts to become spring, where my shoots are coming out. And the other three are just beautiful, but these two, they do have a lot of roses for the first bloom, and then it just seems that the leaves turn a yellowish green, and I just don't know what to do with them.
Hmm. Well, you're doing a lot of things right, Carol. Now, there are many experts who are coming out lately, I've noticed over the past 3 to 5 years, who are concerned that knockout roses, the, you know, supposedly very disease resistant, are being overplanted. And whenever you have that kind of a monoculture, weird things start to happen. Knockout roses are especially prone to the rose virus. So my first question is, do you have really weird looking growth on any of these plants?
No.
Okay.
No, it looks normal, except it's not a good rich color.
Mm-hmm. And are they all getting equal sun?
Yes, they all get plenty of sun.
And you say they're planted in compost and topsoil. Do you add compost to the surface of the soil ever?
On occasion, I do. I didn't do that this year.
Okay. But this problem's been going on for X number of years?
Yes, for a couple seasons now.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you say you prune them in the spring after they've been growing for a couple of weeks?
As soon as I see where the shoots are coming out, I prune about a third of it down, which I do with all of my roses.
Yeah, that's exactly well within the absolute correct window for pruning. It sounds like your other stuff is doing well. It's possible that these plants, for lack of a better word, are going bad. again, we're seeing lots of problems with knockouts that I don't think were inherent in the plant. But again, anytime you've got so many of the same genetic species out there, they're going to develop problems. What I'd like you to do next year is no actual fertilizer and none of your home remedies. But what I want you to do is locate the best quality compost you can find, either yard waste compost that comes from fall leaves from your local municipality, or even better, there are some really high-end composts that are available in bags. One brand is Coast of Maine. They make a lobster compost, a compost that includes lobster and other shellfish material from processing plants. This compost contains chitin, C-H-I-T-I-N, which is an impossible-to-find plant nutrient in any other way. Roses love compost. A lot of times roses that have weak colors on the leaves, they'll respond tremendously to a mulch of 1 to 2 inches of really high quality compost. And I bet if you went to a couple of independent garden centers, not the big box stores, you'd find the lobster compost, and they'll know what you're talking about at a real garden center that's staffed all the time by people who know plants. And that's your best shot at getting the color back in those leaves. If that doesn't happen, I would just toss the bad plants and replace them with a different type of rose, not a knockout. And I expect the problem would not come back.
Okay. Thanks so much, Mike. I really appreciate your information.
Good luck.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Nevi, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, Mike. Glad to be here.
I'm glad to have you here, Nevi. Where are you?
So I'm right next to Valley Forge National Park in Chesterbrook.
Oh, do you have enough deer to play with?
Yes. But I live in a townhome, so all I have are decks that I container garden on.
Oh, good, good, good. That defies the deer, doesn't it?
Yes, it does. So my question mainly was regarding growing sweet potatoes and root vegetables in containers.
Okay.
I was very happily surprised that I saw a few flowers blooming on my sweet potato vine. And then I didn't know what to do with them. I mean, am I supposed to take them off? How would I know when is my sweet potato ready to harvest?
Okay. Now, what did you use as a starter? Did you plant an entire sweet potato? Did you plant what are called slips, the little green things off a sweet potato? What did you do?
Yeah, I planted slips.
Oh, okay. Where did you get the slips? Did you grow them yourself?
I just got them off the farmer's market. So the sweet potatoes that I got
had
grown slips over time, and I just cut them off and I put them in the ground.
Okay,
in the container.
And that's the best way to do it. That is the professional way. What kind of a container are they growing in?
It's a 5-gallon bucket.
What? And I thought you were classy. Yes. Come on, you got a townhouse and you're growing in 5-gallon buckets?
I'm a very beginner gardener.
Oh, come on. You got the toilet outside with the flowers growing out of it, too? Come on.
Almost.
Yeah. In subsequent years, for the sake of your neighbors, before they come after you with torches and pitchforks, go to an independent garden center and get some nice big plastic pots. You're going to get better results because they really have professional drainage in the bottom. So what did you fill your beautiful 5-gallon buckets with?
Yeah, I did make holes in my 5-gallon buckets for drainage. I filled them with potting mix.
Okay.
And some compost.
Okay, good, good. And when did you plant your slips?
I planted them, I believe, in June.
Okay.
Early June, yeah.
Okay. And you have big vines that probably cover the top of the container and go down the sides, right?
Yeah, so I have my railing of my deck with beautiful sweet potato vine.
And what color are the leaves? Are they straight green or are they variegated?
They're green.
Okay, good, good. What color are the flowers?
Purple and white.
Okay, very interesting. There are ornamental sweet potato vines that are bred to produce lots of those flowers. And the fact that you have flowers means that you're on your way to getting sweet potatoes. Sweet potatoes are a very long season crop. It is possible to grow them here in the Northeast, although you have to get, you know, pretty much every day of the growing season. But if yours took off pretty quickly, the vines are pretty long, and they're flowering, you're in good shape. Now, you don't want to do anything with that plant until after your first frost. You're going to leave the container out there on the porch to continue growing, and then one morning you'll come out when it'll have gotten really cold overnight, and everything will be wilted. That's the time to get a bunch of newspaper or whatever, empty the container out, and see what size sweet potatoes you got.
Okay.
But you don't want to harvest them too early. They're probably still pretty small. This is the stage at which they'll be putting on most of their growth. Try to get them as much sun as you can to help finish up the sweet potatoes. But actually, it's better for them if the top part of the plant is killed by frost before you harvest, because that'll concentrate the sugars inside the actual sweet potatoes. You'll get tastier sweet potatoes than if you had harvested them a day early while the top growth was still alive. So it's great. You really grow them until the plant dies, and then you get to empty the bucket and see what you got.
Great. So in the meanwhile, am I supposed to break the flowers off?
No.
Okay.
No, they're beautiful.
Yes, they are.
Yeah, just enjoy them. They're kind of a bonus round here.
Great. Thank you so much. That helps a lot.
Yeah, and, you know, the vines, the way you got them trailed, they can be really beautiful. Next year, get what's called a 17-inch pot. And that means it's 17-inch. Yes, 17 inches high, 17 inches across the top. You'll get lots more sweet potatoes out of that. All right, good luck to you.
Thank you.
Okay, so congratulations. It's a great thing for an amateur gardener to grow.
Bye-bye.
Well, it's time for me to take a little break and announce that I'll be honored to deliver the keynote address Wednesday, October 17th at the Capitol Speakers Club of Washington, D.C., an organization founded over 65 years ago to empower women through the development of public speaking skills. At the Columbia Country Club in Chevy Chase, Maryland, I will be joining past luminaries that include Lady Bird Johnson and Ruth Bader Ginsburg. Members only, but members may bring guests. But don't go looking for all the details at the events section of our website just yet, because we'll be right back to help you eat your holy produce and take more of your fabulous phone calls. I'm Mike McGrath, and you're listening to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia.
Support for You Bet Your Garden is provided by the Espoma Company, offering a complete selection of natural organic plant foods and potting soils. More information about Espoma and the Espoma Natural Gardening Community can be found at espoma.com.
Welcome back to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia. I am your host, Mike McGrath, and we're in the stretch now, cats and kittens. In just a little bit, we will investigate the mystery of chomped produce in the garden. Who's taken bites out of the peppers and tomatoes? And are the remaining parts safe to eat? We'll answer those intriguing questions after a couple more of your fabulous phone calls at 1-888-346-9499. Kate, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Well, I appreciate you taking my inquiry.
Well, thank you for making your inquiry, Kate. Where are you?
I'm in Elkhart, Indiana, which is just about 20 miles east of the University of Notre Dame. So we're right on the Indiana-Michigan state line.
All right. What can we do for you, Kate?
Well, several years ago, I bought what I thought to be a single-season plant. I bought a crepe myrtle. It was gorgeous. It would look beautiful next to a bright blue birdbath that I have. And I assumed one season it would croak, and it was okay. But we are just out far enough in the country that we still have an old-fashioned septic system. And I happened to plant it, evidently close enough to that said septic system, that winter came, it went, and poof, I have growth on my crepe myrtle.
So I'll explain to listeners who don't understand why you thought the plant would die. Crepe myrtles were, and I use the term were very specifically here, the ultimate southern flowering shrub or tree. They flower very late in the season. And there was a time when you just would not see a crepe myrtle really north of Washington, D.C. But as the winters have gotten warmer, they have crept up. They're very common in the Philadelphia area now. And I'm not surprised that if its roots are in the warm water of a septic field, that it survives that far north.
You know, I guess lucky me by happenstance at that rate.
You know, you're not the only person who lives in the country. I was a city boy who bought a country house. And one of my neighbors, one of my first visitors, goes, "Oh, this is nice. Where's your septic field?" And I go, "Septic what?" And they go, and they explain the system to me. And I go, "I don't know. How will I find it when it's time to get it pumped out?" They said, "Just watch for where the snow melts first in the winter
time. Where the snow melts and where the bulbs sprout a little earlier than regular."
Yeah. So do you have a problem or are you just bragging?
Well, like I said, the bigger thing is, how do I prune this thing based on my zone 5? Because obviously the root ball is going to be protected in the wintertime.
Right.
But, you know, I wrap my rhododendrons. Should I be wrapping the crepe myrtle to protect it? And is there a trick to trimming this baby back so I keep a conformation that looks nice but without doing it any major harm?
Well, first of all, your timing is perfect. Prune nothing in the fall, because any plant we prune now, it's still warm enough to stimulate new growth, but that growth will soon freeze. And that's very damaging to plants. This is the time of year to hide the pruners, especially from helpful spouses. And I don't even know if you need to be wrapping your rhododendron. They're pretty frost hardy. But if you want to, that's fine. No reason to wrap a crepe myrtle. It'll be fine. Now, is this a shrub form with a lot of branches coming up, or is it a tree form?
No, it's a shrub form.
Okay, about how tall is it now?
It's probably 3.5, maybe pushing 4 feet.
Oh, that's great. Okay, so what we do is we leave it alone in the fall, and then in the winter, we leave it alone. And then in the spring, we wait till we see the first flush of new growth, and then we check the calendar to see if we are out of the range of any hard frosts. And when those two things come together, when it's growing again and all danger of frost is gone, you go out there and you give it just a little haircut. A plant that size, you should be pruning off 6 inches to a foot of each branch. Just a tiny little haircut. That'll keep it at the same height and will improve the flowering dramatically. These plants do like a pruning, but they don't like what's called crepe murder, where some people will cut them back to the ground. Just because the plant survives this doesn't mean it likes it. So the ideal is in the spring, after new growth, you remove as much of each branch as it grew the previous year. You literally keep it the same size. And you should always prune it in the spring. It really enjoys a haircut.
Cool. Because it's absolutely gorgeous. It's just now getting past flush of the of bloom.
They are one of the latest plants to flower. They're magnificent because there's not a lot else in flower at this time of year. So enjoy it, and then leave your hands off of it until the spring.
Thank you very much, Mike. I really appreciate the information.
Bye-bye. 1-888-346-9499. Welcome to You Bet Your Garden. Pat.
Yes, hello.
Hello,
thanks,
Pat.
Thanks for taking my call.
Well, thank you for making it, Pat. Where are you?
I'm in Princeton, New Jersey.
Excellent. What can we do for Pat in Princeton?
Well, I just relocated to a townhouse, and I'm parking my car in the driveway, and there is a beautiful, mature linden tree on my lawn. And the branches are extending over the driveway somewhat. And I'm only here since the end of July, but I started to notice that the car was sticky, and it started to get very dirty. And one day I went out, and the roof was covered with horse flies. There must have been 10 or 15 of them. There were a few hornets. There was a wasp. So it seemed like they were eating whatever it was that was gathering on the car.
Uh-huh.
So I did some research, and we looked at one of the branches, and it seems that we have aphids.
You are correct.
And what they described, these droppings, it's aphid honeydew.
And I'll stop you right there, because
yes.
I love these euphemisms of entomology. Back in August, I went to the Philly Folk Festival, where I've been going since 1970. And you're camping out in an open field, and there's no electricity or running water. You use porta-potties. And these kids today don't understand what the honey truck is. The honey truck is the truck that services those porta-potties.
Mm-hmm.
So honeydew is more like honey don't.
Right. Well,
the polite word an entomologist would also use would be frass, F-R-A-S-S, and that's a $20 word that means bug poop.
Yeah, right, exactly. So my question is, the leaves are starting to fall off the tree, so I assume that will solve the aphid problem for now.
Correct.
But what do I do in the spring? I also know that there's some kind of a soil injection treatment.
Oh, God, no. No, no, you'll kill a million bees.
Oh, wow.
Anything systemic that gets into the soil will immediately go to any flowers the plant forms, whether we see those flowers or not. And there was a terrifying article, I forget what area of the country it was out of, but suddenly there were like 50,000 dead bumblebees in a parking lot of a big box store. And they found out that some landscape company had injected the soil around all the trees for this very cause, to prevent aphids. And then bumblebees had come to feed on the flowers and, you know, pollinators beyond belief were wiped out. You can't use these things. There's always collateral damage, and you don't have to turn to anything like that. Now, first, you do have a job right now. You got to get that car washed and keep it washed.
Well, I did it myself because I don't like going through the car wash with me sitting in it, but I'm going to have to do it again.
The basic line on that is 24 hours, it's easy. After 24 hours, it's hard.
Yeah, I see. Mm-hmm. Okay.
So, a couple of things. First, this winter, what would it look like if you had the tree pruned where it overhangs the driveway?
Well, that's a problem because I belong to a condo association, so everything has to be approved. And I know there is a plan for pruning, but I don't know exactly what it is. I could find out.
Well, you should. I always get disturbed when people tell me they don't have control over their landscape. But that would be the ideal solution to buy some time, at least, or not to have it drop on the car, is to prune the branches on that side of the driveway. And no matter what anybody tells you, that could not be done now. That could severely damage the tree by causing new growth right before winter arrives.
Right.
The best time to do that is in the dead of winter or early spring. Do you have control over your lawn? Do they put herbicides and chemicals and fertilizers on your lawn?
I'm not quite sure, to tell you the truth.
Okay, you got to investigate that, because if they're fertilizing the lawn with high-strength chemicals, that's causing the aphids to appear.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Aphids generally go after stressed trees. So removing the stress of that chemical fertilizer that's affecting the tree, making it grow faster, lusher, abnormally fast, that'll get rid of the aphids. And if everybody in this area has aphids and their lawns are being cared for the same, you got to talk them into just even just reducing the strength of the fertilizer. It's too strong, and the trees are the indicator of that. The easiest way to get rid of aphids is to get a pressure washer and just spray them out of the tree early in the season as soon as they appear. You just keep blasting them out of the tree early, and they'll just go away. The ones that get flung out of the tree die. The others get so depressed they don't come back. You can also, which is really cool, you can mail order ladybugs and lacewings, beneficial insects that prey on the aphids, release those under the tree in the evening on a wet surface, and they will stay there, and they'll go up into the tree, and they'll eat those aphids for you.
Okay, well, thank you so much.
Good luck, Pat.
Okay, bye-bye.
All right, as promised, it's time for the question of the week, which we're calling, What's Eating My Garden? And Are the Leftovers Safe? You Bet Your Garden producer Brett Rader, please get us started with this week's intriguing question.
Sure thing. In an email with the subject line voles, Vicky in Madison, Alabama writes, I believe that my garden has recently been visited by these pests. The question is, do I throw away all the veggies that they have taken a chunk out of, or try to salvage the parts that may still be consumable?
Well, that strongly depends on what's doing the eating. For instance, if a slug takes a chunk out of a big bell pepper, I would certainly cut away the bad edges and eat the rest. Same for rabbits, deer, tomato hornworms, and other hungry, hungry caterpillars.
So you don't think that it's the voles she suspects?
Doesn't sound like it, Brett. Voles do eat a lot of plant material, but the damage they do is at or below ground level. They don't climb, and they're not known for taking bites out of things. They devour entire root systems and underground plant parts, especially spring bulbs.
Okay, back to the topic at hand. What damaged produce would you not eat?
Anything that was attacked by mice, rats, or raccoons. There's a real risk of disease, especially with raccoons, whose poop can be extremely dangerous to humans, whether you inhale the dried material or touch it fresh.
Right. Yet another reason to always wear gloves in the garden. Now, to try and figure out exactly what is doing the eating, we asked Vicky to describe the damage, and she wrote, I first noticed that my tomatoes were getting eaten about 2 or 3 feet up, then the green peppers. Whatever it is did not touch the jalapenos, but did take one bite of a hot banana pepper and never bothered that again. It hasn't bothered the cucumbers. And she continues, I have a raised bed vegetable garden that's about 18 inches high, framed with cement blocks and filled with sand, compost, and bagged garden soil. I do have some sweet potatoes taking over now that the tomatoes and cucumbers are almost done. I thought that the height meant it would not be rabbits. That and the fact that the droppings were on top of exposed leaves.
What? Wait a minute. Droppings? What droppings?
I think she explains that later on. Here we go. She says, I did notice droppings, what I think is scat of some kind. Kind of a lot. It does not look like mouse droppings, more like rabbit in that it's small and round, but it is black and not smooth, more of a rough texture. I was able to just blow it off the leaves I found it on. Could this be bats? Do they eat veggies?
Hey, did somebody say bats? I'm Batman.
And did you eat her veggies, Cape Producer? Anyway, bats are carnivorous. They eat night-flying insects, especially big, tasty moths. They don't eat crops. They protect them. Oh, and I'm Batman.
I don't know. I thought you were the Joker. Well, anyway, what do you make of her scat?
It's not nearly as good as Ella Fitzgerald's. Now, I first thought slugs, as they can climb high and often go unsuspected because they do their dirty work at night. They could still be part of the action, even if it's not just them. So I suggest she crack open a beer at sunset, pour it into containers like old margarine tubs, and check them in the morning. If the containers are filled with dead drunken slugs, those miserable mollusks are at least part of the problem.
But that's not slug scat she sees, right?
No way. Now, rabbit poop is pellet-shaped and light in color. And again, they're ground feeders. They can't climb. Raccoon poop looks quite a bit like cat poop, which is not like what she's describing. Mouse and rat poop is somewhat rod-shaped and very distinctive looking. She says round, and that makes me think of deer. Deer scat is round, black, abundant, and looks like a pile of little cannonballs. But each deer eats many pounds of food a day. They devour entire plants rather than just take bites. Tomato hornworms. These are the biggest caterpillars in North America, but often escape detection because their natural coloring blends perfectly with the branches and leaves of tomato plants. And the rampant growth of tomatoes offers many excellent hiding spots for these beasts.
Do they also attack pepper plants?
Yes, they do, but they don't attack cucumbers, so this matches all of the evidence. Many gardeners first notice the distinctive frass at the base of the plants they're munching on before they ever see the actual caterpillars. It looks a little bit like miniature deer poop, and as Vicky notes, there's a lot of it. They're big characters. Oh, and I should also mention that her suspect voles would have decimated those sweet potatoes she mentioned. It is one of their favorite targets.
So what should Vicky do?
First, check for slugs. If they are present, get one of the newer slug baits whose active ingredient is iron phosphate. Then carefully inspect the plants for huge green caterpillars. Look at pictures of hornworm frass online to make a positive ID. If they are also guilty, get the old original form of BT and spray it on the plants as soon as the tomatoes start to form.
Okay.
Well, that sure was a lot of information about rounding up the usual suspects now, wasn't it? Luckily for you, the question of the week appears in print at the Gardens Alive website. To read it over in detail, just click the link for the question of the week at our website, youbetyourgarden.org. Gardens Alive supports the You Bet Your Garden question of the week, and you will always find the latest question of the week at the Gardens Alive website. Yikes, my producer is threatening to harbor my hornworms if I don't get out of this studio. That means protect them, kids. We must be out of time, but you can call us anytime at 1-888-346-9499. Like in Safe Harbor, you know? Or send us your email, you're tired, you're poor, your wretched refuse teeming towards our garden shore at garden@whyy.org. Please include your location. And visit our website, youbetyourgarden.org, where you will find the answers to all your garden questions, audio of this show, past shows, and our priceless podcast. Ken Queter plays our theme song. Our vice president of production is Terry Murray. Elizabeth Perez Luna is executive producer of audio content for WHYY. Our engineer is Al Banks, and our social media director is Amanda McGrath. Check out her fine work and stay current with what's happening with the show every day at the You Bet Your Garden Facebook page. Larissa Sapko and Rich Banowitz keep our website uneaten. The indomitable Al Banks is our editor. Dominable Brett Rader is our producer of record. I'm your host, Mike McGrath. And hey, is that the plane to Lisbon flying overhead? Well, if I can't manage a letter of transit, I guess I'll see you again next week.